Okay, welcome everybody. We're going to get started here. Sorry, I was running a little bit behind time. We got a gentleman here that's actually trying to study the sound system and make sure everybody in the future can kind of hear what's going on a little bit better than what we've had. I'm just going to go through the agenda really quickly. Turn it over to some of the council members too if they want to give some opening remarks. I just want to thank the council for putting together the general meeting. I know it's something that tribal membership has always wanted, wants some ability to engage with tribal council. So we came up with this agenda here. I know there's some things that aren't on here that maybe folks have some interest in wanting to talk about or wanting to hear about. I think Denoto Corporation is one of those things. We're hoping to have more extensive meeting, I think around January. I'm not sure exactly when, but they're working on putting together their plan and a presentation to the membership also. But just going to go through the agenda here, and if there are any questions regarding the agenda, and then if not, I'll turn it over to the council members if they'd like to say a few things. First thing we're gonna have is the new interim forest manager, Quentin Matilton. He's going to make a presentation on the Hoopa Mountain property, a recent acquisition the tribe was able to obtain this last year. I think there's some exciting things that could be happening with the Hoopa Mountain property, but just want to give some input into that and some of the stuff that we've been trying to get through as far as the management of that and what that all means to the tribe, access to the property, things of that nature. But also he's going to make a presentation on the forest management plan, something that we are going through revisions and I don't know if it's a complete rewrite, but it's definitely something we have to do every 15 or 20 years or so. Obviously, we made a change at the forestry department. Jeff Lindsay was the previous manager. Felt like it was some things there at the forestry department were needing to get moved along a little bit quicker. So we have Quentin now as the interim manager, and he's going to make a presentation on a couple of those things. After that, we'll have some questions. And then we're going to get into the Hoopa 4 project, which is the Pookie's Park campground. I think the rodeo was in there for a period of time. I know some folks were wanting to have some additional information on the timing of that, where things are, and how that's going to be moving forward. There's been some delays, I know, even, I guess, for myself, not really understanding the timing of the project and where we are now. So hopefully Nathan can clear some of that up for you. Obviously, after that, we can have some questions. And then after lunch, we're going to get into the financial update from Moss Adams. It's a company that we contracted with to come in and do an overall kind of financial analysis of the tribe systems, tribe's accounting, take a look at the deficit that we've been talking about for a long time. They're not completed with their full report just yet, but they're going to provide kind of an overview of the scope of work that they're operating from and provide some additional information, kind of an idea of what's going on, where they are, and some of the things that they've found so far. And after that, we're going to have an update from the Kamau Medical Center, the new CEO, Ryan Zumwalt. Not sure exactly when he started. I think it was like October, beginning of October. He's been there for a little over a month. Just wanted to give him an opportunity to come talk to the membership about the things that they've been working on and some of the stuff that's happening in the future over there. I know we've been negotiating with Indian Health on the contract support cost agreement here most recently. I think that tribes are a little concerned about the future of healthcare in Indian Country with President Trump coming on board. We're trying to get as many things done as possible with the current administration and leadership. If there's a change at the top with Director So at the Indian Health Service, that might not be a good thing for tribes. But anyhow, after that, we're going to have a fisheries update with Mike Orkett. I think something that folks have always had a real interest in. And again, like always, there's all kinds of things that are happening within fisheries. I think the tribe feels like there may be some risk, again, coming up soon with the new administration. Been working, trying to get some meetings in advance of the new administration coming on, then the outgoing administration with Secretary Holland So far, we haven't been successful at that, but we're still going to push and try and get something done before the end of the year. And then the last thing on the agenda are cannabis regulations. It's something the Tribal Council has proposed recently, and I know there's been a lot of interest in understanding what it is that the tribe's doing, what it is the tribe is going to be doing. So we'll have Keith Anderson, who works for an attorney firm AIM Law. We have him on retainer now, so we're going to work through that also. So that's the agenda for today. I'll turn it over to any council members if they wanted to say a few things. And then if not, we'll just get into the first presentation by Quentin. But Council, more than welcome to.
I just want to say good morning and welcome to everyone. Glad you're here. You know, I hope we have a good day. Everybody gets all the information they're looking for. If not, feel free to speak to us afterwards or hit us up and, you know, ask any questions. Like Ryan said, this new presidential administration coming in is going to be a very, very different administration from the last 4 years that we've seen, which is quite a big concern. So anyone that wants to write letters to our Congress and our district reps, senators, on how important funding is for Indian country, I implore everyone to do that. We'll be doing that as well, because there's some big changes on the horizon that could really, really affect us. But I just thank everybody for coming and hope we all have a good day and glad to see you. Thank you.
Good morning, Daniel Jordan, Ball Hill District. Just want to let you know that, well, first of all, thank you all for being here. This is, the tribe is a huge government, $220 million budget. We have about seven major entities that do lots of stuff. If you divide the $220 million by 260 government work days, we are spending about $834,000 a day. That's a lot of activity happening within the tribe. These are the kind of meetings, when you get these reports, you get an idea of what is happening within the tribe, but understand that's just one report. There are activities happening all the time. We are, when you look at the budget, how we have grown in 2016, the SED said we have a $65 million budget. By 2020, we had a $94 million budget. So we have huge increases in tribal spending, and there's a question about, okay, how do you keep up with accountability? By 2021, we had $98 million, which is $4 million more than the prior year. In 2022, which was COVID, the first year after COVID, and the money, our budget jumped to $140 million. By 2023, it jumped to $220 million. Now, that may show great things, right? But you better have the capability of managing that. And I think that's partly when we get into the financial discussions, that's partly what we're going to be talking about is we have a lot of activities that have piled onto a government system that was really built prior to 2016. So we get to dissect that, and there's multiple parts of it that need to be dealt with. But anyway, the fact is we're here Councilmember Haley says that we're going to be facing new issues with the new administration, and so we better make sure that our organization is capable of withstanding the pressures that have come down on us, as well as the potential changes in funding and how are we going to deal with that and still come out at the end of it with the Hoopa Valley Tribe in a place we call our home forever. So anyway, the reason why I was going to tell you is that we have put in a 2025 budget an acoustical system for this office, I mean, for this gym. This is where we trade information, and unfortunately, the acoustics in this building, I have hearing aids, and I have a hard time. We had a GONA meeting in here a couple of weeks ago, and people were moving from place to place to find a better place to hear. So we are going to deal with just how we have these meetings and making sure that our acoustics in here are really compatible with what the membership needs to hear. So anyway, that is in underway. We are going to hire an acoustical engineer to come in here and take the facility, the height of the ceiling, all the different walls and everything, and try to figure out. In fact, we are going to figure out how to best create an audio system that actually is user friendly. So anyway, thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you all. Yeah, I'm just excited to be here as this first council member, and I've just been getting caught up with everything, and I'm glad that our council's been able to work good together, and we're moving forward and making progress. So I feel good about that, and I'm excited to continue to work on future projects and everything. So thank you.
Elizabeth Turner, I want to thank you all for being here and welcome you, and I'm looking forward to engaging with you and your questions, and hopefully we can answer them. Thank you.
No, I have no comment at this time.
Okay, thanks. I think what we're going to do is welcome Quentin up to the mic here and start his presentation. After we get done with that, we can open up for questions and answers. Okay, thanks, you guys. Yeah. Is this where you guys want them? Is right here? Yeah, okay.
Hey, young everybody. My name is Quentin Matilton. I am the forest planner and acting forest manager at Hoopa Tribal Forestry. First off, I just want to say that I'm truly honored and privileged to be here today speaking to the community on the behalf of Hoopa Tribal Forestry. All in all, I'm a proud tribal member who is passionate about attaining our diverse forest management goals and objectives. I'm also very blessed to have the opportunity to be here today speaking about the management on our homeland. This is a testament to the wisdom, strength, and courage of the Hoopa people throughout all of time. So thank you all for your hard work, and we are going to continue to do our best to manage the forest responsibly for current and future generations. So with that, I just want to get on to our main topics of the day. The first one is going to be the Hoopa Mountain property. If I could.
Next slide.
Righty, sorry about that. So on to our first topic of discussion of today, the Hoopa Mountain land acquisition. Just to start off with a little review, The tribe purchased the 10,395-acre Hoopa Mountain property for approximately $14.1 million late last year. This brings our total land holdings to up over 102,000 acres combined with the square and this new acquisition. And we got support from the acquisition from the Conservation Fund, which helped out with negotiations and setting up the deals and helped out with just striking the deal in general. The Coastal Conservancy, the California Natural Resource Agency, Tribal Nature-Based Solutions Program, as well as the Resource Legacy Fund, as well as others. So there was a lot of funders that put in to help us acquire this land, so we're grateful for that. So the tribe, with the acquisition, we had to agree to some of the land use restrictions to help secure the funding. And so some of the restrictions out there right now, it's listed in that paragraph right there below. It's to protect and restore water quality, anadromous fish habitat, wildlife connectivity, and forest health, and for tribal and public access compatible natural resource protection. And we're also subject to monitoring inspection by the Coastal Conservancy or the NCRA. So there were the main point. I know there's questions, which I ask kindly to hold off until the end of the presentation, about the public access. And just right now we're limited, you know, on the public access, and that's why there's a gate on the property right now. And we're coming up with solutions to get the public out there, so you guys could get in there and see the property for yourself. It is everybody's land, and that's the main priority for forestry and for tribal police moving forward. One of the ideas that we had was to potentially open it up for a day or two on the weekends with tribal police there, but just as it is right now with the land use restrictions, there's no like hunting, or it doesn't even mention gathering in some of those. So that's something we want to correct moving forward and possibly put some language in this agreement and get the public have this Hoopa Mountain territory for full public access. Next slide. So we also have a couple projects going on out in the Hoopa Mountain land acquisition. In 2025, we're going to start the Reserve Treaty Rights Land Plan. We call it RTRL. And for this one, tribal forestry, we're going to receive approximately $4 million in funding for fuels management activities. The funding allocation was provided by BIA with the intent to meet the Department of the Interior's trust responsibilities for ancestral areas that are tribal resource management priorities at high risk to wildland fire. So our goal with the RTRL is to conduct approximately 1,000 acres of fuel reduction treatments to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire in the Hoopa Mountain property as well as the entire reservation. This is going to include developing shaded fuel breaks along the ridge lines using various fuels reductions treatments such as mastication, low thinning, piling, and burning. And the project is scheduled to be completed by 2024. We're aiming for approximately 200 to 300 acres per year. And that map displays the ridge lines. And the coloring there is the treatments, is the acres we're going to target there. So we're targeting ridge lines. And it's just a really cool project, and it's going to serve a really good purpose to protection for the entire reservation from wildfire. And it's only a matter of time before, the western side of the reservation is actually threatened by wildfire, because I know we're used to the eastern boundary being threatened by wildfire, but there is significant potential for one to come from the other side as well. So this project addresses that. Next slide. Oops, sorry. So with the Hoopa Mountain property, we inherited a carbon project that was developed from the previous landowner, which was New Forest LLC, which is an Australian-based company, a forest management company. This carbon project began in 2019, and the 100-year plan locks us in until 2119. As you guys could see there, with the carbon in purple, shaded in purple on the map, about 80% of the total property or 8,000 acres as part of the carbon project. So every October, we have to submit a offset project data report, which provides information and documentation required by the cap and trade regulation and compliance offset protocol. In this report, it calculates the total net greenhouse gas reductions, removal, and removal enhancements are also included in the offset project data report. Some of the work that comes along with the carbon project is forestry is responsible for conducting approximately 350 carbon inventory plots every 12 years. And we're going to be doing these on a yearly basis, so it kind of minimizes the plots we have to put in per year to around 30 or 40. Let's see. Oh, and there's also a third-party verification. There's a third-party verification of the OPDRs occur every 6 years or sooner to ensure data matches what we report in these offset reports. So far, this carbon project has accrued, just in this year alone, has accrued 28,000 metric tons of potential carbon reductions, which totals about $840K in projected annual revenue if the tribe decides to participate in the cap and trade program. Again, I want to clarify this, that the tribe has not decided whether or not we want to participate in the cap and trade program. But with it being in fee land, there's the price of taxes, and there's also the price of the carbon plots and the carbon activities. So we could pay for that through participating in cap and trade, or we could pay that through timber sales out there in this area too, to increase wildfire resilience and improve wildlife habitat. So if the carbon agreement, if we sell carbon, the agreement will extend another 100 years from the date it is sold. Another fact about this is that we could only sell carbon until 2025, which is the first 25 years of the carbon deal. We have to continue on with the inventory plots and the OPDRs throughout the 100-year period. And one thing to be aware of is that the carbon market fluctuates, but it's seen a steady climb over the past 10 years. It's went from, like, say, $15 per metric ton to $30 per metric ton. So it's more than doubled in the last 10 years. So I just think that's something that tribal council and the membership need to decide on, you know, whether or not we want to pursue selling carbon credits or not. At forestry, I think our job is to present some alternatives and provide information to the decision makers, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to provide multiple alternatives to move forward and pass that information along to tribal council and the public.
Next slide.
Okay, so on to our next topic of discussion for today, which is the forest management plan. So the tribe's FMP for the period 2011 to 2025 is coming to an end in July of 2025, and this needs to be updated for the next 15-year period of management. Forestry, however, will seek a one-year extension on the current version of the FMP, making an update by mid-2026, and we're doing this because we need to complete a timber inventory analysis, which is really time-consuming, and just the current circumstances with the forestry department and the lack of a planning staff right now has kind of really impacted our ability to get this done in a timely manner. So we're going to complete the timber inventory analysis as well as the NEPA for this next 15-year period for our forest management plan. And this will just give us a lot more time to meet with our interdisciplinary team, as well as have working meetings with tribal council and just public hearings, because we want to hear everybody's opinion on the forest and what you guys want to see out there, because it is the tribe's forest management plan. And we want to be able to make some changes moving forward. So currently, in this current forest management plan, the annual allowable cut sits at 8.889 million board feet annually. Usually, if we harvest the entire allowable cut, this generates about $2 to $3 million with current log prices how they are right now, which with some of our second growth, timber is sold at over $650 per thousand, so that's a pretty good price for some small timber. And as stated earlier, public participation is vital in this process. We want to hear from everybody. Every tribal member has a voice. And so forestry is going to work towards this NEPA document as well as our timber inventory analysis to update the forest management plan in 2026. So therefore, starting in February, we're going to be holding public hearings to kind of get the, you know, public's word out there on what you guys want to see moving forward with the forest management plan. And we're going to have our next one in February, and forestry will reach out to tribal members through public notice, via email, newspaper, and social media, or just get my contact information and I could give you my email and we could do it that way as well. Next slide. So here we have some of the important issues I think that we should address in our next 15-year period. I'm just going to bring those forth now. So I wanted to kind of talk about the historic historic forest conditions as opposed to how they are now. So historically, our landscape was adapted to wildfire and evolved to the Hoopa way of life primarily because of our use of fire as a management tool to favorably manipulate the environment. Traditional burning was a management tool we used to control vegetation dynamics, which what we call that silviculture in forestry nowadays. And we do this to improve health of desired plants and eliminate plants we did not want. And yeah, just kind of seeing it on the landscape, you could still see remnants of how the forest historically looked. You could see like tan oak orchards, black oak orchards, usually in prime locations, such as flats and ridge tops. You know, it was really served no purpose to have an orchard, you know, on real steep slopes. So that's what we targeted as a tribe. And we also, the use of fire also helped protect the valley and food sources from harmful wildfires by controlling fuel loading, which is the buildup of brush and dead forest material. So fire served multiple purposes and just optimized the use of fire through various reasons. And traditional burning optimized the production of traditional food and materials that we relied upon for thousands of years. This was the oak orchards, the prairie management. And this requires maintenance with frequent burning to enhance traditional food and materials such as acorns, habitat for elk and deer, hazel, bear grass, and many more. And it helped prevent conifers from taking over, which we refer to as conifer encroachment. Just the lack of traditional fire over the years has allowed the Douglas fir to creep in and start to encroach and take over these prairies, and they now look like mature forest. And as stated previously, it helps the fuel from accumulating and prevents catastrophic wildfire. So all in all, the fire-adapted landscape was open, containing numerous prairies and oak woodlands, which I'm now referring to as oak orchards because I believe those trees were planted there specifically for food, which meets the definition of orchards. And these were in prime locations surrounded by fire-adapted old-growth forest. Next slide. Yeah, so this is a picture I took during the 2020 Red Salmon Complex. This was an old growth stand that was on the eastern side of the dozer line. And I just took these pictures to kind of represent the value of old growth outside of just the log price. You know, like old growth still has a value because it serves as a resilient to wildfire. It serves as protection buffer for the dozer line out there. And you just see it takes fire a lot differently than you'll see in these next photos of second growth. It cleaned up the understory there. There was, you know, a little bit of fire scar along the bark there, but with those old growth trees, the bark's real thick and they take fire well. And overall, this was, you know, there, it was not a worst case scenario. And just having this, having old growth on the forest serves more of a, it's valuable more than just the log. So it allows you to see the forest, not just for the trees, you know what I mean? There's other values associated with old growth, such as wildlife habitat and wildfire resilience. Next slide. So our current condition of the forest, so past management decisions have dramatically changed the landscape. Fire suppression and lack of traditional burning, combined with intensive logging and single species management, has changed the landscape. It's led to extremely dense, unhealthy forests that is vulnerable to catastrophic wildfire. In all, we have thousands of acres of dense, fire-prone, second-growth plantations, approximately like 40,000 acres. We have decades of fuel accumulation. Prairies and oak orchards have been taken over by conifer encroachment. And a lot of these plantations lack diversity, both compositional diversity and structural diversity. They're all the same age, they're all the same height, they're all spaced out the same, and contain a lot of fuel in between the trees, and they're prone to catastrophic wildfire. Yeah, and just another reason is just looking back on our past success, that's what these FMP updates are for, is looking back to see how the plan worked over the last 15 years. We had a hard time there. There was a lot of bear damage in our plantations that caused significant loss of trees and value in the future. We've had a lot of unprecedented storms come through the reservation in recent years. That's kind of caused a lot of wind throw in these plantations, knocked a lot of tops out, and that just adds to the fuel accumulation in these stands. And we have a backlog on burning and reforestation. We're getting a little bit better. We've caught up in recent years, but there was a gap there where we weren't reforesting like we should. So that affects the future and future potential revenues, just if we move forward with even age management. Yeah, and some of these fires have came through Mill Creek and kind of torched some of our high value second growth. These stands were 60 years old plus, and they were burnt up in the fire because of the fuel accumulation and things like that. And we really didn't do a good job with our salvage sales. Like, we didn't do a thorough enough job, so we have a lot of standing dead out there that actually could have been harvested, you know, for a lower value, but it could have been harvested, paid for activities, and we could have replanted out there to look out for the future. But instead, we've kind of planted trees in between snags like this, and that's really not the best solution to move forward. So there's just things that we could clean up if we continue to move on with even age management. But overall, the forest is in need of ecological restoration. The old growth's running out. We're not really making a lot of revenue off the old growth. And as I stated earlier, old growth presents other values outside of just revenue, with the wildlife habitat, with the protection of wildfire. And we need to get to these stands, these second growth stands, before they burn up. We have a rotation age of 80 years. And it's no guarantee that any of our plantations are going to reach rotation age. So my thoughts are to target our most dense and high-value second-growth stands and thin those out intensively. And, it's not like it's no 50,000 board feet per acre like with old growth, but it is like 20,000 board feet, and it does still provide jobs and revenue opportunities for the tribe. So next slide. Yeah, so this is another picture from the 2020 Red Salmon Complex. It's kind of hard to see on the picture there on the left, it's hard to see all those brown trees, but it was just acres upon acres of dead trees from a backburn that we had to do to protect the reservation from the Red Salmon Complex fire. And Yeah, those are stands we could target now. They are merchantable. We could sell them to the mill. It'll generate, you know, not a old growth stumpage, but it generates some value at least. And that's just what happens with if we continue to ignore managing some of these younger stands. On the right there, you see the fuel accumulation, the surface fuels. It's the deadwood on the bottom and the ladder fuels that kind of creates a ladder for fire to climb into the canopy, which creates really catastrophic high-intensity canopy fires that we don't want. Next slide. Another issue we're seeing out there is encroachment on our oak orchards. So this picture here is of a tan oak that's about 45 to 50 inches at diameter breast height. So it's a big tree. And you could see that there is evidence that this tree was open grown. Looking at the dead limbs going all the way down the tree, that's a symptom that the tree grew up in an open environment. And just the lack of fire has allowed these, for 100 years plus, have allowed these Douglas firs trees to be seeded in, and they're growing up and to be big, tall trees now. And they start to outcompete these oaks, and we're starting to see these oaks just get shaded out, and they end up dying because of lack of sunlight. We call that suppression. So you see there, those are nice merchantable trees that we could be cutting and releasing these oaks to allow them to persist. And that's just another opportunity for us to do what we're good at, cutting conifer while doing something good on the landscape. So there's another opportunity for second growth thinning and for oak woodland restoration to still be cutting conifer and still be selling it to the mill. Next slide. So there's several benefits to ecological restoration. Restoration of widespread cultural burning, traditional foods and materials enhancement, sustainable second growth timber management, community resource wildfire protection, revenue opportunities, increase in funding opportunities, as well as providing employment potential. Next slide. So the return of traditional use of fire. We want to utilize traditional knowledge of elders, basket weavers, as well as the rest of the community. You know, a lot of people have good knowledge of the reservation as far as locations and know exactly where to find the things they're looking for out in the forest. But the forest is not ready for traditional fire to be applied on a large scale at this time. Some areas are too vulnerable to wildfire, and we could be potentially risking the quality of our timber and firewood and things like that, what we harvest the forest for and all the benefits that it provides. There's large amounts of fuel reduction and timber harvesting will need to occur before a widespread traditional burning. And we're just gonna take this on one area at a time over the years and, you know, throughout my career, hopefully the forest is looking a lot better. But it's not all going to happen at one time. Next slide. So yeah, this is kind of what our prairies are looking like. Some of them, there's prairie encroachment of various ages, but some of the stands actually look like this. This is up Bald Hill on the Bloody Camp Road, where this all used to be open grassland, and just the lack of traditional fire has allowed these conifers to seed in and grow up to be nearly 200 feet tall trees with, you know, 40 inch diameter at breast height diameters. And these stands have a lot of merchantable wood in there. You know, they have greater than sometimes 60,000 board feet per acre. And there's just another opportunity for us to be targeting these stands, cutting conifer, selling it to the mill, getting fire back out there. And it's just kind of a win-win for all. So in this situation here, we would cut all the trees down, we would plant with native grass seed, potentially leave a couple snags here and there for wildlife perch sites. But there's just opportunities throughout the reservation like this. And like I said, not all prairie encroachment stands look like this, but a lot do. And the frequent return of fire is necessary to improve availability and accessibility and quality of many traditional foods and materials for acorns, deer, elk, hazel, beargrass, wildfire protection, as well as like food sovereignty moving forward. And I know just during the COVID, the COVID endemic, the store, kind of went without food there for, a while, 3 or 4 days. I think they were kind of waiting for a delivery. It just wasn't coming. The store was empty. So I just think food sovereignty is important moving forward, so we don't have to rely on, these emergencies and these catastrophes that happen that affect us here. We need to be able to have a food source out in the forest just for our sovereign reasons. Next slide. Yeah, just more pictures of some black oak being encroached upon by Douglas fir. These trees, there's not really much hope for these trees in there, but we can potentially just start over. It's kind of save the oaks that we can and plant other oaks in open space and kind of develop that for future generations. But right now, these conifers are really threatening our oak woodlands all across the reservation. And you find these oaks a lot on flats, on ridgetops, and a lot of them on south-facing and southwest-facing slopes, just because that's where you get the most sunlight, and our ancestors knew that, obviously. Next slide. More pictures of tan oak there on the left side being encroached by some pretty nice Douglas fir. That one's like 25, 26 inches at diameter breast height. And you kind of see on the right there a remnant of an old predominant black oak or tan oak that's just kind of been shaded out. And that's what happens. They just kind of fall over and die like that due to lack of sunlight. Next slide. Right there, there's evidence of a open-grown madrone. Had limbs all the way down to the bottom. That's kind of losing limbs as you go up the stem now. And some pretty gigantic firs grew up around it and starting to shade it out. Next slide. So with our second growth timber management, so we have approximately 45,000 acres of second growth stands. Not all of them regenerated with like a lot of like merchantable Douglas fir. A lot of it was regenerated just with a lot of tan oak sprouts and stuff like that. So you're looking at extremely dense stands that aren't really, a lot of the second growth is the hardwood stands are really not worth a lot, but it's still important to manage those stands for to prevent catastrophic wildfire. Well, we have approximately 30,000 acres of second growth that's 40 to 65 years old. We have approximately 6,500 acres of dense Douglas fir dominated stands. And essentially we could thin those. We could either target 300 acres per year for the next 20 years to thin the 6,500 acres of dense Douglas fir, or we could take it up a notch, say if we had two or three feller munchers to 600 acres, and that would last us 10 years. And that delay allows all the other plantations that are, 30, 40, 50 right now to just age and put on more growth for similar activities, after we're done thinning this 6,500 acres. And I think the important thing to take home from these second growth stands is they're not resilient to wildfire, especially when you look at it from a timber perspective. Like some of these trees are still alive and are still green, but they're really not worth much, a timber value with scorches like that and like some insect infestations on the right there. So just fire's bad from a timber perspective too. If we want to sell the timber, it lowers the value. Next slide. So goals of second growth management: restore wildfire resilience, primarily with thinning, but modified clear cuts will be used in certain circumstances where, there's a stand we want to treat. We got to put two or three crossings in. Maybe it's wise to just go ahead and do a 10-acre clear cut as opposed to a thinning to help cover some cost. We want to increase diversity, improve structural diversity. We want multiple age classes in there. We want to enhance species diversity. We want to favor hardwood development in these stands, just because back in the 60s and stuff, they used to spray the oaks. So that's why we actually have some really dense second growth conifer plantations with a lack of hardwood. So when we do find hardwoods in there with nice crown ratios that are still somewhat healthy, they'll benefit from treatment, so we want to prioritize releasing those. Wildfire protection for community and younger second growth plantations for future revenue. And doing the thinning, that's going to reduce the amount of acres we need to be reforested, so that's going to allow us to catch up on some of the backlog that we have, knowing that new timber sales won't have to be regenerated because we're going to be thinning and leaving the stand stocked. And we're still generating timber revenue to the tribe while supplying jobs. Next slide. So yeah, just more benefits, employment opportunities to the tribe, small business opportunities through brushing logging contracts. We got a lot of those going on right now with Forest Service agreements, CAL FIRE grants, as well as our own tribal activities. And yeah, and we could look at expanding the mill to kind of cut down on the haul costs, you know, because right now we're sending all of our logs to Trinity River Lumber in Weaverville or to the Corbell Mill in Blue Lake, near Blue Lake. Next slide. So yeah, the problem with the landscape could also be the solution, knowing that we are a timber tribe. Logging and fire suppression were the cause of an unhealthy forest, but they're all also important to forest restoration. We want to keep all the same tools in our tool belt. We just want to utilize these tools differently to get what we want. Yeah, it's really critical to thin the forest, eliminate bad fire with fire suppression. So when we get these hot fires coming in the summertime, we want to stomp those out. We actually want to burn in the cooler months, you know, the October, September, end of September, those burn windows. We get a lot more beneficial burns as opposed to these summertime burns, July, June. And yeah, the abundance of small and medium-sized conifer is problematic, but it could also be the solution, knowing that we could cut those trees down and sell them. We're good at, you know, harvesting timber, and we could continue to do the same thing for, you know, more traditional purposes, I guess you'd say. And next slide. Yeah, and this is the end of my presentation, and I brought these maps up. The second growth stands on the left, that's the 6,500 acres of dense second growth stands. The one on the right is just kind of like our, everything that's colored there besides black and green has been cut over. In green is our remaining old growth. We have about 22,000 acres of old growth remaining, but a lot of this old growth is in riparian zones, it's in inaccessible areas, non-regenerable areas. Yeah, so we looked at a lot of the old growth already and kind of, it's there for a reason at this point. We've been harvesting old growth for a long time, and a lot of it is locked up and unharvestable, or it just has a lot of rot, has a lot of hardwood. Like, these stands aren't economically feasible to log and make money off these old growth stands. So with that, I just wanted to close out my presentation and open it up to questions.
Thanks, Quentin. If anybody has any questions, I appreciate the presentation. Yeah. Thanks, Quentin.
Quentin raised two different issues in his presentation. One is the land, the Hoopa Mountain. The other is Forest Management Plan. Regarding Hoopa Mountain, what we have stepped into, I'm glad the tribe did that. And by the way, this was a prior council. I wasn't on this, so I really commend the prior council for their work in getting this, everything set up, $14 million of money that bought this land without anything from, well, without anything other than staff working through this. So it shows that the tribe has tremendous internal capability. By getting that land, of course, we have to do the management of it. We have to figure out now what is the status within the confines of the agreement on conservation. Does that include hunting? And does it? So those are things that be worked through. But also, there's something that we actually acquired as well with the land is the taxation of it. And so, and there's another piece of property, 500 acres or so, that is being offered up to the tribe and anybody else who's willing to buy it. So do we buy that? So the land base of Hoopa is getting bigger, but we have the complexity of how do we manage that. So one of the questions that I have is that this land even if we bought the other piece of property, there are two parcels, right? We have the Hoopa Reservation, right? And we have state of California jurisdiction here as uninvited guests. They came as a result of federal laws. And on the reservation, we pay for all the fire, for example, not the community fire. The ambulance money comes from Hoopa Share. The law enforcement comes from Hoopa Share. And the county, who collects its taxes and property taxes on the reservation, takes it out for their own benefit. So one of my questions is, should we take on these individual parcels as a issue to deal with the state jurisdiction and taxation, or should we just deal with the whole reservation and tell the state of California, you have no business here anyway, it's our reservation. You got your jurisdiction by an act of Congress a long time ago, but the tribe is the one who's paying, Hoopa Tribal Shares are paying for all of the services in Hoopa. Even, for example, PUD, everybody pays their PUD bill, but the PUD is a multi-million dollar company that was built by the Hoopa people, and everybody, including the fee landowners who pay their money to the state, are getting the same services as everybody else. So this is a very inequitable balance system. I have a tremendous amount of appreciation to the Hoopa tribe because we're willing to go way above and beyond what anybody else is willing to do here because this is our home forever, right? That's how we think of it. But there's a lot of people who get benefits that don't pay for it. So so when we deal with this issue with taxation, do we deal with this one piece of property, or do we deal with reservation wide? That's one issue, and there's a whole bunch of other things that go along with that. But regarding the land, the forest management plan, we really need to think about where we're going with timber. One thing I just will absolutely commend the council for our positions that we've maintained on entities and that the 80-20 split of entities, that's the people's money. That's where your per capita payment is coming from this year. In the past, so we can look at past, present, and future. In the past, per capita payments come from trust funds. And as Quentin says up here, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on forest land, and we're moving from old growth to second growth. We got a trucking problem out there that the trucks are drying up out on available market, and so when we look at moving timber, a heavy product from Hoopa to an outside market, will we even be able to get the trucks to do that? So that's when we look at the next 15 years in the forest management plan, we need to look at all those things. We do have the mill, and is the mill capable of producing the same or more revenues than selling to outside markets? Now, the numbers we've heard from the mill is that if it's done right, and we can get those markets for that timber, the value of the timber can be 2 to 3 times the value of a log, or of the same volume in a log. So those are the kinds of things that I encourage everybody to look at the forest management plan, look at how it works today, look at how you feel about the timber management today, and think about how should we be managing 5, 10, 15 years from now. Because we need to transition away from where we're at. And if we're going to get to managing the forest in a way that Quentin says that it's the need, how are we going to pay for that? Because we still may have a change in federal funding coming our way as well. So anyway, I look forward to these discussions because this is where we're talking about our own future and what our future will look like and how do we preserve the value systems that we have, you know, always had, past, present, and future. So we're defining ourselves for where we're going to go. So please look at this and look at this forest management plan represents 85% of what the Hoopoe Reservation will look like, because that's the volume of commercial timberland on this reservation. Is 85%. The other 15% is within the urban zones.
Thanks, Dan. Does anybody else have any questions? Quinn? Oops. Come up to the mic. Yeah.
So for me, I have a couple questions. The first one is, how does, if they're before the potential carbon credits, how does the sudden oak death encroachment, how does that affect that? Would we be liable for anything like that because of oak death? Would we be liable any type of way? Because I know with carbon credits, you do have to pay back if the carbon, I guess, is not produced or saved or what, however they quantify it.
Yeah, so the only way that we would have to pay back the carbon credits right now is if we were, if there was a wildfire out there and it was out of negligence on our part. Other than that, if there is a wildfire out there and it burned through and it was a catastrophic wildfire and it was not negligent, then that would kind of end the carbon project right there. For sudden oak death, I mean, that's just something we need to continue. A lot of these treatments that we're doing out there already kind of serves as a buffer to keep sudden oak death from coming onto the reservation. So in the end, yeah, I don't think there's much of an impact with sudden oak death on the carbon project.
So my other question has to do with the forest management plan. So I just want to know how integral, because the current plan doesn't really show much of it, of TEK, Tribal Ecological Knowledge in the Forest Management Plan. And for me, it's all about language, because language holds Indian thinking, traditional thinking, cognition. So you were talking about the oak stands. Mm-hmm. So my teacher talked about what they call Kiwitsek, the umbilicus of the babies when they fall off, how the people would go and they would plant an acorn with it. And it ties the people through the land, and that you could go and go find your great-great-grandma's tree and she could literally feed you. Those type of things, I don't see anything like that in the current plan at all. Nothing like that historically or socially or traditionally in the plan. So I'm hoping that more of that will be incorporated into it. Other things for me is cognition when it comes to linguistic things is like when we say wilderness in English, you're actually saying wilderness, and it means a separation between what is wild and what is civilized, a separation between the people and the forest. So in Indian, we don't say that. We say tinta. So the difference in thinking is very stark in that we don't separate ourselves from the land. What that actually means is where the trails are. So that type of thinking, that type of connection to the land, I would like to see in the forest management plan. But I don't know if that's going to happen because it didn't happen last time. And then the other thing was the word for like the fires you were talking about, the traditional fires. So the word for a forest fire, we say kiulil, and people just think that means forest fire, but it means something that burns through time, past, present, and future. So Indian thinking, like you were saying, it happened all of the time. It was a process. It was an integral part of, I guess, the social aspect and dynamics of the people. So, but that thinking is different than how you would think about it in English. So I don't know, is that also going to be incorporated? To me, thinking like an Indian is a big deal, because we're all Indians. We should be thinking like Indians. I don't know. It's kind of a hard question to answer.
No, absolutely. That's why these public hearings, these public meetings, and these working meetings are extremely important to get your voice out there. You know, if we want that stuff put into the forest management plan, which I do, I want anybody that thinks they have some traditional knowledge that could be useful and they want to see that, you know, implemented in the land, on the land, then show up to these public meetings and participate, and we'll do our best to put it in there and make it work, because you do bring up several valid points. And yeah, I think in the past,